Well, hey there, Sugar. This here is Rogue, and you are listening to Comics in Motion.
Welcome to Examining X-Men 97. I am your co-host, the ever-astonishing, ever-uncanny Spider-Dan, and I'm joined by my other co-host, the exceptional man with an X in his name. It's Max Byrne. And we've got a doozy to talk about today, Max. My God. My God.
We have. It's episode 5. We're halfway. We're halfway there, living on a prayer, as Bon Jovi once said. My God. I mean, obviously, we shall discuss it at length, mm-hmm. but Jesus wept. What a halfway point episode. As we were discussing before we hit record, it is the best episode thus far of the run, isn't it?
Absolutely, 100%. And kind of solidifies a lot of the ideas they're exploring, the character arcs, does some very interesting things. And like, again, I may have predicted some of it in our previous discussions, but even I couldn't predict most of this. It was incredible, really, really good. We're not gonna hide our cards or clutch them close to our chest. We're going all in on this one. So, by the way, guys, full spoilers up front. This is your Tonya Todd spoiler warning. We're going to discuss this in length, and I think this is one you do have to watch before you listen to this. So please, as much as you enjoy both of our silky smooth voices, go and watch the show first.
It would be very hard to discuss this episode without delving into spoilers, because all the meat of the episode revolves around real big, like, mic drop moments in this episode. So it's impossible to talk around it. So yeah, you have been warned, guys. Spoilers. Yeah.
No, certainly. But I don't even know where to kind of start with this one. Where would you like to start, Max?
Well, it starts at the beginning, a very good place to start, as Maria von Trapp once said.
Full of all the musical references this week.
Yeah. I mean, it's a two-pronged episode, isn't it? There's kind of two narratives going on. There's two settings, one of which is a lot more eventful than the other, to say the very least, but there's still some good stuff going on. So, you know, we'll talk about it, but sort of the primary setting of the two-pronged sort of narrative. On one hand, there's a TV crew at the mansion. They're making a kind of news piece / documentary about the X-Men. They're trying to sort of give them the opportunity to portray mutant kind in a more appealing light, make them come across as, you know, just like you and me and all that kind of thing. But sort of at every turn, something seems to happen that makes it just look like that's anything but the case. Yeah. And then on the other side of it, we have Gambit and Rogue taking a flight to Genosha to attend a sort of, I don't know what you call it really, a sort of gala evening.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, it's kind of very heavily inspired by the Hellfire Gala comic books of recent years. Like, I've not read that run, the kind of Jonathan Hickman, Fall of X, House of X, all that. I've not read any of that, so I can't really say, but it's every year they have a kind of, it's basically the Met Gala of the Marvel Universe. So all of them, they turn up in very kind of, what's the word? Kind of lovely.
Outlandish.
Outlandish, very, very fashionable outfits, or fashionable versions of their outfits. Very, I don't know the word, but it's something French, I'm sure, that I'm really trying to think of. But yeah, that is exactly the vibe I got from the evening that they had.
Yeah. We may as well talk about the Genosha set stuff. I mean, it's straight away, you just, when they get there, you get this sense of what this wonderful utopia is that's been built. It's a very futuristic kind of setting. I mean, when they're flying in and you get to see what's going on at street level, there's a real sense of joy, isn't there? You know, it's where mutants can live free without fear or, you know, being made to feel different. There's a sense of fun. There's music everywhere. Dance. People dance, literally dancing in the streets.
Dancing in the streets.
Yes, it is, actually. Yeah, where's David Bowie and Mick Jagger when you need them? Yeah, yeah.
Dance, magic, dance.
Yeah, we'll try and slip a Bowie song in every week, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Christ knows what we'll do next week, but we'll think about it. But yeah, so it's a very like utopian setting, and that's a great scene because there's so many deep cuts of different mutant characters.
I was going to say,
blink and you'll miss some kind of stuff, but there's loads in there, isn't there? Mm.
Blink is not among the mutants, though, Max. No. I must say that particular mutant is not there, but every other one is. Yeah, you get some real. I made a list of some of the characters. If you'd like to hear my
Let's
list,
go.
The ones that I noticed. So I won't go into some of the other things that I'll list later, but Glob. From the the Grant Morrison run, who I mentioned, I think, in one of the earlier podcasts, who was basically a big jelly man, and you can see his bones on the inside of his body.
The weirdest looking mutant ever. Yeah, he's got no hope. Of being accepted on the streets, is he? Fitting in
with everyone else, just very well. I mean, with the thing and the turtles, if they just put like a big trench coat and a hat on, no one's going to notice. Like Beast as well. He's fine. He doesn't matter. We've got the Welsh mutant Pixie. One of my favourites from the kind of House of M era. Really cool character. Multiple Man, Jamie Madrox from X Factor and X Factor Investigations. Exodus, who kind of almost took over from Magneto for a while. He became his kind of heir apparent. Archangel we see flying about here and there very briefly. Boom Boom from the New Mutants is there. Marrow, who I think might be on the list later as well. The Watcher, which I didn't notice. You picked this up, Max. I didn't notice this.
Well, I'd like to be like going, yes, I saw Huatu, the Watcher, straight away. I didn't. I missed it, but I saw it on social media.
Right, fair
And enough. Then every Tom, Dick and Harry is picking up on it going, oh, look who I spotted. Yeah, of course you did. All right, yeah.
I did notice something because there was like a faint outline and it hung on the shot for a little while. And I was like, that's weird, but I couldn't make out what the outline was. I was like, what is that?
Yeah,
And even watching it again this evening, I was like, I still can't make out that that's the Watcher, but the Watcher is in the comic books is known for witnessing significant events.
If he's there, something's about to happen.
Yeah, something's about like during when they were creating the Civil War and the Civil War was about to kick off, the Watcher turned up and everyone's like, oh shit, what have we done now? What's gonna happen now? But yeah, so and we also get the original writer of this show, who was no longer with the show, Bo DeMaio makes a cameo as well.
Did he? I must have missed that.
He did in the show, and he's come out and talked about this specific episode and what it means to him, and we'll talk about it later. But yeah, I agree with you, Max. It's very I got a very Wakanda vibe from this, like really like a joyful, wonderful, bountiful place, you know, a utopia, a paradise. And I love that they were like, you know, it's quite hard to make a utopia overnight, which they kind of have. Like if we go back to that our first podcast when we were talking about that last episode of the original series, mm-hmm. when they're all in their little Smurf village and where this is only like not even really
a year,
like,
isn't it?
A year or so.
A year, yeah.
And how far they've come, like that's, you know, fair play to them. But again, I guess mutant powers probably ease that a little bit, and you know, with creating things, building things, but still fair play. But I was overjoyed that we got one of my favorite characters come back, Nightcrawler. Just wonderful character, and I love that he was brought in to be the kind of a religious advisor and kind of works with all the different groups of faith. Wonderful. I think they pulled back a little bit on his religious stuff a little bit. He wasn't as quite as dark or as depressing or as moody or, you know, as kind of, you know, what's the word? Kind of angsty. They pulled him back and he was a bit more of the happy-go-lucky elf, which I kind of like. I think they found a good balance there.
Yeah, it was very playful, actually, quite a joyful character. And I wrote here in my notes, like, Nightcrawler lights up the screen every time he's on.
Oh, absolutely.
He's really bright and effervescent, you know, teasing Gambit about him, you know, not sort of making his move on Rogue and just going for it. And, you know, when he And Gambit makes some reference to his demons, and he goes, "Oh, you have a scimitar tongue, Gambit," or something like that. What a brilliant line!
Yeah, they reference the episode they met where all the racist monks are after Nightcrawler. And he's like, oh, they haven't come with us. Don't worry. But yeah, I thought he was wonderful, and he's dancing away. He's having a good time. Like he's one of these mutants that I feel like, again, like Beast, how, you know, finds pleasure. Obviously, there's a bit of that kind of self-hatred going on a little bit, but I like to see mutants enjoying and reveling in their powers as much as I like to see the opposite. There has to be that kind of balance, because I think if it was all, you know, dreary, you know, dreadful, depressing stuff, then again, we can't have the fun with the idea and the, you know, the wonderful nature of this universe. The original actor came back to voice him, hasn't missed a beat, fit right in, much like the other voice actors, wonderful. And he's absolutely nailing it, bamfing around every which way and doing his best to, you know, protect people and nurture this new wonderful kind of, you know, paradise. Wonderful return for that character, and I think it really showed how well he works in any, you know, I hope that he becomes like a full member of the X-Men maybe after this. Just a wonderful character, and again, like you said, lights up the screen in so many ways.
He does, yeah. He was really, like, you know, obviously he's a main player in the X-Men mythos, and you know, so to get him in is great, and just to have him be, you know, such a bright sort of presence, very much into that. But there's some interesting, you get, aside from that side of it, you also get a sense of like the political sort of machinations behind the scene. They form this council on Genosha, haven't they, with Banshee, Moira, MacTaggart, Callisto, Madeline, Emma Frost, and Sebastian Shaw. I think that I've named everyone. And Magneto as well, I suppose. Yeah. Magneto too. And it's about, you know, the PR side of it, how they want someone to be elected leader, and they're trying to push Magneto into that. I must say as well, the appearances of Banshee and Maureen MacTaggart, some of the worst accent work I think I've ever... Banshee's Irish accent and MacTaggart's Scottish accent. So bad. I mean, school play level.
even my joke Scottish accent of Moira impression the other week was actually better than what we heard in this show. I'm not the biggest or best actor, but fucking hell, like that, miles ahead. I think the problem as well is you get the problem with Banshee and Moira being one's Irish and one's Scottish, and the accents are quite, let's be honest, quite similar in a lot of ways. And
yeah,
I think
if you're in this show,
you get. And the problem is, you're getting people that are not either, and you're putting them in a scene, and they have to maintain their accent against somebody else who has a very similar accent, and they're trying to do it. But yeah, fuck me. And I think probably what happens at the end of the episode is probably the reason why they were like, we'll just keep their appearances and lines very, very brief.
Yeah, it just ever so slightly took me out of it for 5 seconds when they were having this exchange around the council table, especially Banshee. You know, he's like, I say this, Magneto, you know, and all this really bad Irish accent. But you know, c'est la vie. So obviously we get this thing where they're trying to push Magneto to take the role, because, you know, they say he's, you know, he's got a good public profile based on his actions at the I don't know what you call it now, the UN or whenever.
Yeah, the UN building, wasn't it?
Back in episode two. And he accepts, but only with one. He says, you can have me on one condition. Oh. And that's Rogue comes in as like his sort of co-leader, or the queen to his king, if you will. And that is the sort of catalyst for this wonderful, finally, in the context of this show, I should suppose, filling in the backstory with those two, the romantic past, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it fits in with the continuity of as well. If you watch A Rogue's Tale, which is kind of her origin story, how she got her powers from Ms. Marvel, all of that, it does fit in, because she does, within that training with Mystique and her as her stepmom or foster mom, she does do that. And then we see, again, there's some kind of holes there, because she didn't she was training with Avalanche and Pyro, but later in earlier in the show, she'd never met Avalanche or Pyro. Mm. So there's a kind of a continuity all there. But within this continuity that they've kind of created, it does make sense because it's before she bumps into Xavier and joins the X-Men, and they kind of just like, she contacts him and says, we just pretended it never happened, which again is kind of, you know, it's a retcon, but it kind of works for me. Like, I would much rather watch a whole show about the, you know, Magneto and Rogue than, Gambit and Rogue. But that's my preference personally. Mm. But that's, you know, it's up to you. But, you know, that does get somewhat resolved at the end of this episode. So I'm sure we'll talk about that when we get to it. But yes, so, Rogue is put in this difficult position where she has to, and again, she's kind of saying, you know, oh, was this your plan? Was this what you wanted to do? You wanted to be the king of all the mutants? Is that what you were trying to do? And he's like, no, but, you know, we need to show that we can bridge worlds, that we can build something, we can show, you know, convince the world that this could work and this is a beautiful place and should be, and that we can break down those boundaries. Like, we can touch each other in front of people, and again, like, just like bringing worlds together sort of thing. Like you said, all the PR stuff that the rest of the world needs to see. That's exactly what that dance, especially in midair that they have, is definitely kind of showcasing that. But really, really, some really, like, a lot of people are describing this show now as a kind of, this is a kind of a Game of Thrones style show, or a, you know, and a specific episode comes to mind when people talk about this episode. And again, we'll get into spoilers in a little bit, but yeah, really, really, really just wonderful writing, just absolutely amazing writing.
Mm, it is. Yeah. I mean, speaking of that dance they do as well, the gala scene in general, they got the music on point. I think I heard Ace of Base
was
playing.
It?
Yeah, it was a song by Ace of Base. I can't remember what
it did
called.
Sound a little Ace of Base-y.
Because I actually wrote down in my notes, the music sounds like Ace of Base. Is that deliberate? Because obviously this is set at a time when Ace of Base were like a hot property.
Huge. Yeah.
You know, people who are not old enough to remember, they were aware, or maybe still are, I don't know if they're still going, but they're a Swedish pop band who had some massive, four or five massive hits in around this time period. They were huge, especially in the UK. I think they were quite big in America as well.
Yeah.
But no, I looked it up and it is actually an Ace of Base song playing. Yeah. So that's, I guess, they're trying to be authentic to the time period. If you're having a disco, you're going to play the hits of the time. So,
yeah,
you know,
sure,
why not?
Sure.
Why not a bit of Ace of Base? But it's a strange old dance they do. It's quite erotic and quite sensual, even with a kiss at the end. But then at the end of it, after all that, she goes, well, no, I can't accept.
I can't be with you.
So, but, yeah. So why do all that? It's kind of strange, you know?
It's, I kind of get it, because she goes, this proposal is made by Magneto to Rogue. Yeah. She then goes to Gambit and says, right, I'm going to be straight with you. I'm going to be open and honest with you, which I think was the right thing to do. She was, you know, they've never been together properly. They've never been in a serious relationship. And he says, you know, you never wanted to make it official. And I respected that. And, you know, and that's why I think she just didn't have that kind of commitment in her because of all the stuff and everything. And then we learn that, you know, Magneto was in the Savage Land, like in the comic, like we discussed. And, you know, they get together and they meet, and she's got the outfit on from those Jim Lee issues, the very sexy outfit. But then again, like what I was saying, I think she needed to show the world that this was a PR stunt, really. The dance was a PR stunt, I think, because I will say it probably was on the cruel side to Gambit, because he is there. After they agreed to be friends and, you know, kind of part ways from now on, she is there. He's trying to have a drink with Madeline, and then she comes in and does it. And again, like, all eyes are on her. She drops from the ceiling, flies in, and they have this dance. And again, she turns around and goes, "Yeah, not for me." Which, you know, but I think she was doing that not for Eric and not for Magneto. It was for, you know, for Genosha at large. Unfortunately, it did seem quite cruel to Gambit, even though she kind of chosen Gambit in a way, because, you know, he said love goes, it's more than skin deep. And she talks about, you know, them both having demons that they can't get past. That's why they broke up initially. They didn't spend that time together in the Savage Land. She didn't stay there. So, yeah, very, some very, like, deep and interesting kind of you know, love and psychology stuff going on. Love tri- like one of the, I'll be honest, I think this is one of the best love triangles I've seen done in anything personally. And you know, and it's done so, like, again, like, this is, you know, it's a kid's show effectively. I mean, after this episode, I wouldn't really call it a kid's show, but you know, initially that idea was, but these complex emotions, these complex characters, it's just, it's mind blowing, you know, absolutely mind blowing.
It is. Yeah. I mean, you're quite right about the love triangle thing. I mean, it's like, you get to see everyone's point of view. There's no bad, there's no real, I know Magneto is, you know, he's like,
He is Magneto.
He has a bad guy in him, but in this situation, he's not playing the bad guy. You know, he genuinely loves Rogue, which is sort of at the end of the episode. There's an exchange between them that we will talk about. But I think, you know, for him, she's not like just some bit of stuff that he's, you know, massaging his ego, being with. I think he genuinely does love the woman, you know, and obviously Gambit does as well. I mean, Gambit's quite magnanimous about the whole thing, actually. He's clearly upset, but he doesn't hold it against her.
Doesn't get bitter or twisted about it. He goes, okay, I'm hurt. That's fine. I understand. Mm. I'm not happy about it, but I respect you and your decision, and I want you to be happy, but we're friends. That's it. And he kisses her. Yeah. He kisses her on the hand and moves on. You know, he doesn't, you know, he could, you know, he's handled breakups better than I have in the past. I'll tell you that much.
I think he recognizes that he can't give her what Magneto can, which is physical contact. He just can't, you know. No. Magneto is literally the only man alive who can withstand it. So
that line where she goes, you know, you light everything up that you touch except for me, I was like, oof. That really, there's some lines in this where you're like, Jesus. Another great line is Valerie Cooper. Here she comes again, Valerie Cooper. she's like, yeah, I'm not too keen on you making Magneto the chancellor of a whole mutant nation. Not so keen on that. You know, because he's a terrorist, and he's like, oh yeah, but you allow all the world's leaders to become terrorists, don't you? Which I was like, fucking hell, that's, again, very relevant, very deep cut there. Not a deep cut, but a deep cut emotionally anyway. But yeah, like that good old Valerie Cooper coming to ruin the party every time.
She gets everywhere, bless her. First watch, I thought she might have something to do with what comes, but then when it comes, she's there in the thick of it, like running for her life, looking very scared.
So at first,
you know, is she acting or is she not? I don't know.
Maybe somebody's made a step outside of what was their plan was, or what was perceived to be what we were going to do. And maybe she's involved with the same person. They were like, no, we need to time it. And maybe this other person potentially, you know, might have been somebody we were talking about on a previous episode, maybe, potentially. There are rumors circulating. I don't know. I'm still a little bit like, I don't really trust you, Valerie Cooper. You know, I'm still not 100% sold. But then she might be a big red herring. But then also I think that she might not know she's a pawn, maybe, as well. I think maybe...
Yeah, I think so. I don't think she's got entirely malicious evil intention, so to speak. But that's what's so great about this show, isn't it? People the speculation every week now, from week to week, people thinking, I think this is going to happen. I think that's going to happen. Or that this person's going to reveal themselves to be whatever. It's great that it's sparking that debate. That's the real sort of the highest praise I can give to the writing of the show, that it's adding so many layers onto it that you don't, you know, I like to think we're both vaguely intelligent guys. I say vaguely on my part. Very vague.
Yeah, very vague. the vaguest of vagaries. Absolutely, yeah.
Indeed. No, but I mean, you can kind of, you can spot things and you can delve into, prior knowledge of the source material. But even so, there's still things where you're left thinking, I literally don't know where this is going to go next, or, you know, is what we've just seen.
Yeah.
The way it's going to be, or are they going to walk it back somehow?
Yeah,
it's great, isn't it? The way they do.
Oh, I love it, and I'm here every week. I was online. I was at work the other day, and I was like, you know, I might just Google X-Men 97. I'm like, no, don't do it, because it will be a a spoiler, and I think I may have caught some idea or sniff of a spoiler. But again, I managed to kind of mostly avoid most of the spoilers for it. But yeah, I do want to talk again. We're going to talk mostly about the Genosha stuff, but I think it's important to talk about the Trish Tilby stuff and the report. Yeah. I think because that is important character building stuff, and it might not be the most interesting or compelling part of this episode, but I think it's still important. Trish Tilby is actually a character from the comics as well. He was romantically linked with the Beast, and again, there's a little reference there for people that they might get together. But what I love,
she passes him a compliment, doesn't she? And he starts to blush, going, "Ooh, blue ooh. Blushes as well."
Yeah, exactly.
So there's a little frisson on there, isn't there? Yeah,
yeah, a little like meet cute thing going on, and she's genuinely trying to, you know, open this house up, open her feelings up, open the world, and get to know these, you know, these outlaw mutants as they were for so long. Like, get to know them personally. What I love about this part of the episode is that. It's like when I meet somebody and they ask me to, like, they don't know X-Men from Adam. They're like, what are the X-Men about? What's that whole thing? And I try and explain the continuity of X-Men, like I did with Madeline Pryor. And I'm like, let me tell you. Every moment they're like, we don't have a child. What do you mean you don't have a child? I've got birth records here. It's a bit difficult and it's a bit tricky. And then there's like a psychic affair going on, and like, yeah, just be with my clone. And then Trish Dilby's just sat there going like, what is going on? Like, keep dropping in these absolutely mad parts of their lives. And they're like, we're just like normal people, apart from all of this mad shit that we deal with every single day. So I quite enjoyed the humor there. I liked all the stuff with Jean and what she's going through, and flashing back to a portion in the comics. I don't think we saw it in the show, but definitely in the comics, there was where they go for a picnic and she holds back his optic blasts. She can cancel them out with the powers of the Phoenix. So that again was a nice, lovely kind of callback to the comics, and that lovely little moment with Wolverine as well, who's, you know, very supportive and caring. And Scott's being an absolute, I think as Rhea put it, an absolute fucking mess again. Like, he's completely just like, he's all over the show, which is fair.
To be fair.
Yeah, I don't get me wrong. And again, he breaks out and is quite aggressive and kind of almost a bit kind of starting to sound a little bit bigoted, I think, a little bit towards the human race and the blessing they have for living a normal life. They don't have to have their techno-organic, you know, infected babies go off to the future to hopefully save their life or deal with two clones of the woman you love, you know. And I think that's what he breaks down. And again, you know, people are, you know, are prone to break down, but it was probably at the absolute worst time. And then we find out he's been having a psychic affair with Madeline Pryor. Mm. While she's been in Genosha. I really didn't expect her to turn up in this. I thought they, again, give her a bit more time, a bit more air, like she'd go off and do something else, but I didn't think she'd be like, right, I'm in Genosha, I'm running Genosha. And how do they contact her as well? How did they say, oh, hey, Madeline, you know? But I guess maybe there was some psychic communications or something, I don't know. But it's interesting that she's there, and it plays into some interesting stuff later on that we'll get into towards the end. But yeah, I really like these kind of scenes, and again, Jubilee's like, you know, it's not like a normal school. It's not a weird school, even though it absolutely is a weird school. And she's like, you know, there's not boring lessons, but there are vampire dinosaurs that we find now and again. And I love that the show's kind of embracing the absolute madness and weirdness, like the Mojo episode as well. Mm. You know, that, you know, they're embracing how crazy and mad it is while still having these really heartfelt, devastating moments for the characters as well. But yeah, what did you think to this kind of puff piece?
I liked it. I think I'm doing it a bit of disservice to say it was light relief compared to the stuff that's going on Genosha. Because, yeah, there's humour there and there's fun and what have you, but there's also some heavy stuff going on here as well. Let's not forget. I mean, you know, this link between Logan and Jean, you still get to see that there's still some unresolved sort of romance there, in so much as, you know, when he goes to speak to her and she's trying to piece together a past still and everything and try and find out what are her memories and what Ezra clones memories, and there's a little kiss she gives him before Logan goes, no, you know, he's the one who says no, Ralph. You would think it the other way around.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, it was interesting that.
Yeah, he's like, your gene, he, Scott, those are the rules. You just forgot them for a minute, so I'm going to walk away. You go and speak to him, basically. I mean, it's kind of, do you know, it's, I was thinking that's kind of the most they've given Wolverine to do in this show so far. When you think about it, he's been very much a peripheral character, which is weird because, for better or for worse, Wolverine is the flag, in terms of the general consciousness of the general public,
sure.
Wolverine is the flagship character of the X-Men, isn't he, in terms of profile? Hmm. You know, if you ask someone to name an X-Man, they would probably say Wolverine. You know, he was positioned very much as a star in the live-action films. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone's excited for Hugh Jackman's return this summer as said character. But in this show, he's only done bits and pieces, hasn't he? He hasn't had his own storylines.
Yeah. But I think this is good though, because I think a lot of people, like me and Andy, have had this discussion before, and he was like, I remember when Days of Futures Past was not Days of Futures Past, Age of Apocalypse, X-Men Apocalypse was coming out, and Andy was like, yeah, there's a trailer, yeah, but where's Wolverine? And I'm like, Andy, the sum total of the X-Men is not fucking Wolverine, all right? It can be outside of it. And I think this show is doing a great job of going, no, yeah, Wolverine's great. Don't get me wrong. Wolverine is fantastic, great character, but use sparingly, he's good. I think if you overdo it, like the Joker or Batman or any of those big characters, Deadpool especially, you misuse them, you just get fucking bombarded, and it's too much. It's just like, right, okay, you know, the Punisher and the Wolverine comics, there's five Wolverine comics, five Punisher comics, it's too much. Like, he's on, there was time where he was on every single X-Men book, X-Men team that was going, and the Avengers
and
as
the Avengers,
well.
Yeah.
You know, we don't need that much Wolverine, nobody does. And it makes it less special as well. It makes it less, you know, and in the show, he wasn't, you know, front and center every episode. He had his key episodes, and I loved them. And when he did turn up, he always had something to say or something interesting to do. But I think if you overuse him, and I'm glad they've gone, right, let's he's going to be there, he's going to do his thing, but he's definitely in the background, because I think they've brought forward all the wonderful characters, all the, you know, again, the X-Men universe is full of wonderful characters, weird, wacky, bizarre. And again, the ones in the show are wonderful as well, but I'm glad that they've been brought to the forefront, and Wolverine has been put to the back a little bit. Again, I don't think he's been shortchanged at all, because we talk about him every week. He has a moment every week that we talk about an important thing, an important character piece. But I'm so glad that they've gone, the X-Men is the X-Men. It's not Wolverine and the X-Men.
Yeah, there was a show called that. You know, we don't need that.
And again, very good show. Very good show. Very different. Again, maybe not my idealized kind of version of the X-Men or X-Men cartoon, but still very enjoyable for what it was and what it was trying to do and what it was trying to say. And again, he was the leader in that, but he was forced to be the leader because that's what the future needed, and he was like, I don't know if the future really needs me as a leader, I'm not really that kind of guy. But yeah, I absolutely agree with you. I think this is, and that's what they should do after Deadpool and Wolverine. I think, you know, as much as we love Hugh Jackman, I think that's it. You know, I don't foresee, maybe he'll do maybe they do the big Secret Wars event and he turns
I think up. He will appear in Secret Wars, because that's very much going to be a multiversal extravaganza thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
With everyone who's ever fucking played a Marvel character coming up for a little cameo.
But
so I imagine he'll be in that, but not long term in the MCU.
No, I don't think so. I don't think he wants to do it, but he enjoys it and people enjoy him in the role. So yeah, but yeah, I think this is a good thing. And again, like people are saying, like, I think Andy as well, again, he's saying, you know, I can't even see what a live action X-Men could be now or what they could bring. And I was like, they'd have to do something very different. Like, they'd have to do something like Generation X or X Factor, like do a different kind of twist on it. You know, so, or something.
I'll do the original.
Yeah, the five.
With Professor X. Tell that story of them as young.
The formation. Start. Yeah, the formation of the X-Men. We had the kind of year one first class kind of thing, which was again more of a focus on Xavier and Magneto. You can still have that, but I think have the original five go with that, and like have them, you know, have a proper those kind of classic adventures. But yeah, there's a lot there that they could explore, and that'd be interesting. But yeah, I'm glad that Wolverine has taken a back seat, because look at the story, the wealth of wonderful stories we're having because of that.
Yeah. I completely agree. I mean, we kind of half joked on one of the early episodes where we were like, oh, suddenly everyone's a Cyclops expert now, aren't they? You know, well, I've always loved Scott Summers, me. Yeah, well,
yeah, he's the best.
We were saying like, yeah, sure. Yeah. But being serious, like you just eloquently put it, that's good. We don't need more Wolverine. Wolverine is overexposed in the sort of general consciousness anyway.
Exposed, overexposed.
Yeah, yeah. He is, yes, the X in exposed. But he is, in all seriousness, he is. So, and you know, the fact that people are going, oh, yeah, I'm loving Cyclops and I'm loving what he's getting to do, fantastic. Because that is a character that really did get shortchanged in the films, for sure. Yeah. Jesus wept. Yeah. So,
and in the original, in the original comics, you know, Wolverine was not the lead guy. He's not the leader. He wasn't Cyclops. He wasn't Jean. He wasn't even Storm. He was an angry little serial killer. He's a hairy little serial killer, you know, short guy who kind of weirdly fancied Jean, and it was a bit off-putting. It was a bit like, you know, that was one love triangle. Like, you know, as well as they're handling it in this, it's kind of like, I don't know, doesn't kind of work for me. But it's been, you know, translated multiple times. But I actually think, again, that they're handling that love triangle, not really, it's more of a love quadrangle, I guess, now. But I think that's been handled in a wonderful way, even here, but better than it ever has been in anything else, I think, personally, in any other adaptation of that relationship. But just wonderful. Keep going. Just do pile on more characters, more unique stories, pull from the comics. Wonderful. Yeah, 100%. Mm.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And, you know, you were saying about as well, Cyclops is sort of appearing to, you know, he's unraveling a bit, he's being very short, and he's, you know, like you're saying, being a bit sort of reverse bigoted towards the human race, if you will. You know, I'd like, you know, it'd be great if they actually pushed him towards the sort of more modern day incarnation of that Avengers versus X-Men Cyclops, who'd sort of gone a bit too far, you know.
Proper extremists,
sort of a mutant militant.
Well, we see you know, all the kind of placards and signs, and one of the signs is Magneto is right, which again was came from the Grant Morrison era. This particular episode is pulling from, and again, eventually it became Cyclops was right or is right. You know, because he took that kind of place as the kind of extreme kind of mutant leader, and again, these two different warring sides of the X-Men, you know, carried on. But yeah, I love what they're doing. It's really interesting, and just all of it. It's just all just so, so good. Like we're just being spoiled really by this. This is, you know, people are saying this is one of the best things the MCU has ever done or will ever do, or, you know, Disney have ever done. And if Disney are smart, they will steer into this. Like 100%, you know, Spider-Man 98, please. Spider-Man 98.
I think that's going to happen. I think the sort of practically universal level of like love for this show, I think will sort of embolden Marvel / Disney / whoever to go, yeah, why not? You know, don't leave money on the table. Make it happen, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I know we are getting an animated series called Spider-Man Freshman Year, which looks quite interesting. I'll give it a go.
I'd watch it, but I want to see that 90s Spider-Man.
I'm with you.
It's set in this universe, for Christ's sake. So, you know. There's no reason why, and there's a ready-made audience for it, isn't there? You know, it doesn't have to find an audience. Everyone's there waiting. The show's still really popular, highly thought of. You know, it's the entire run of it's on Disney Plus. If anyone's not watched it, go and watch it. You'll love it. If you know, if you want to see cameos galore from the Marvel universe, we listed
our favorite episodes on that previous on X-Men episode, our episode zero. So go and watch all of those. Those are the best.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. What was I saying? Oh yeah, so yeah, this storyline, it's interesting, and the sort of this, like you put it, the psychic affair, so to speak. You do wonder to what level said affair. You know, I don't think it's necessarily romantic as such.
No.
Not really, anyway.
But I think
it's more of like a companionship, because let's face it, they were living together as husband and wife and had a baby together. And obviously there's still that mystery as to how long that was the case, because we don't know for sure when they were swapped. That's still ambiguous, isn't it?
I mean,
you don't just throw that away overnight.
No, absolutely not. And that's what he says. He said, that wasn't what you think it is. That was me confused. That was trauma. That was depression. That was what have you. Like, and that's, I'm holding on to that connection because it means something to me. It's special to me. And then like, and Jean is obviously very hurt. And she talks about, she's been very respectful. Like, we talked about how respectful she is about Madeline in that Goblin Queen episode, Fire Made Flesh. But here she's like, well, fuck her. She's just a piece of me now. That is it, you know. And she doesn't feel that way, but she's hurt. So she genuinely is just saying that out of spite, I think. But this is really interesting as well, because, and it's interesting that that Emma Frost was like, you know, oh, my mind drifted there. And she's like, oh, yeah, what a drift, you know, because in the Grant Morrison run, you know, the White Queen, Emma Frost, joins the X-Men. Jean and Cyclops to get together, but they're having issues. And then she goes into his mind and masquerades as her, and they start having a psychic affair. So it's interesting that they made that connection as well, because this is, again, is riffing on the new X-Men from Grant Morrison, Ears for Extinction, especially, which I, again, will link in the show notes as usual. But yeah, it was quite interesting to see that, and the way it was, because, again, he's talking about, you know, he's talking about Nathan, he's talking about his son, he's talking about, you know, it's almost like a more of a therapy session. But you know, you can cheat on somebody and it not be a physical thing. You know, you can text somebody, you can emotionally cheat on somebody. But again, these like Rogue and Magneto and Gambit, they're not together. I don't know if these characters aren't really officially all together either, so it's a lot of kind of muddy, you know, kind of emotional waters, I guess, at the moment. But but yeah, I thought it was really, really interesting and fascinating. And again, they confront each other, because this is the confrontation we thought would have happened at the end of Fire Made Flesh, but they've delayed it. And it's been months, they say, or been at least a month since Madeline's been gone. And we've had a few episodes, obviously, since that, or at least one episode since that. So we've had that distance. So it was really nice that they kind of tore into each other. It was quite real. It felt quite real, that. And yeah, and this is the longest episode I think we've had as well, which again, didn't feel that long, but I'm glad that they gave it that time and these moments to breathe, and these moments to sink in and to again, emotionally, I keep using the term emotionally devastated, because it is. There was some nice stuff as well. Speaking of musical references, Max, I enjoyed when Magneto talked about Xavier's secret smile.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You've got a secret smile. that was my favorite. But I think another good Bowie song to reference is Oh You Pretty Things, because he talks about the homo superiors, doesn't he?
Yeah.
That's a good, yeah. There you go. There's our.
Oh, well, this show's laced with them. You just have to go and look for them, don't you?
Make way for the homo superior, he says. Yeah, that's one of the lines in the song. Yeah, there you go. That's your needle drop for the new film. When they do a live action X-Men film, they're going to play Oh You Pretty Things. Kevin Feige, you heard it here first. So if you take my idea, you owe me some money.
Oh, I'm sure he's contacting the David Bowie estate right now as we speak, working out the deal to get that song, you know. In the
wouldn't
film.
Wouldn't surprise me.
No, wouldn't surprise me.
Shall we get to it, Max? Shall we get to the thing everyone's talking about?
Let's get to it. But before we get to it, let's get to the bit just before the shit hits the fan. Okay. Oh, we get that little cable cameo, don't we?
Yes.
Where he's somehow got knowledge of what's about to happen. Mm. So he's come basically to warn everybody. He's sort of running through the outside of the gala going, everyone, you know, everybody leave it, turn that music off. Everyone get out of here. Mm. They're coming. And you're thinking, oh, who's coming? But then he has that moment where he essentially meets his mother, Madeline. And, you know, in that sort of 5 seconds that they spend in each other's presence before he gets sucked back to where he came from, she realizes who he is. She says, it's your eyes. Your eyes haven't changed or something like this. And he realizes it's her, because as he's being pulled in, he goes, I'm sorry, mum, or something like that. Real heavy stuff, that, isn't it? To be that reuniting, but snatched.
Take it away.
It's over before it even started.
Also, she had that precognitive vision of her own death that was in the first episode. Do you remember? Mm. And that mysterious person in the dust said the same thing. And then a big sentinel popped up, and then all those graves and the big kind of devastation, this kind of post-apocalyptic landscape. So she saw her own death coming. Mm. So that, I thought that was really clever as well. Cause I was like, how's that going to turn up? How's that going to appear? It's a wonderful little moment. Cause again, Scott is describing his eyes. Like, I see his eyes. I see Nathan's eyes, rusty hair. And she's like, describing to me, tell me, let's remember our son and who he was and what we love about him. And, and then she's like, when she sent him off to the future, she implanted all those kind of feelings and memories. So he knows what they look like, who they are and everything. And he says that in the original show, they go, the computer's telling him, I think it's Gray Malkin or computer or whatever. And he's like, Scott Summers, he does this. And he's like, I know all about him and Jean Grey. You know, a very like, and then she realizes, she reads his mind and is like, oh, he's more important to our future than you even realize. And it doesn't actually tell Scott. She's not great at telling Scott things. Like, she learns that Corsair's his dad. She learns that Cable's his son. Doesn't bother telling him.
It's kind of a what he doesn't know won't hurt him kind of attitude going on there,
isn't it? Yeah. I think he's going to get hurt regardless, because that's just who he is. I love that moment. And what's really interesting as well, the episode, I thought this would be a Cable-centric episode, because he would say, the name's Cable, Apocalypse, remember it. But it was also something Gambit says as well.
At the end of the episode, yeah.
And in the original show, he says that as well. But also, what's even more interesting is that the original Gambit actor is now playing Cable in this episode, which was quite, given what happens to Gambit at the end of the show, it's interesting that his voice actor is there for his spoilers, his end.
Mm-hmm.
So, I really like that. But yeah, I love this little moment. I didn't expect Madeline to be there. I didn't expect this to happen to a degree, like to her specifically. But and then we get the big, everyone's having a good time. Genosha's reveling in it. They've got a new chancellor. Everyone's having a great time. It's a utopia, like we said, paradise, but it doesn't last long, does it?
No, to say the least. I mean, this sort of, I guess it's about 10 minutes worth of screen time, 5 to 10 minutes maybe. But it, for an animated TV show, it's the most gripping bit of action, destruction, and just sort of death and everything else wrapped up that I think I've ever seen. I think this sequence is big budget live action movie quality in an animated show. It's phenomenal. You can't take your eyes off it. And, again, spoilers for everyone, but there is this enormous attack on Genosha by an army, a literal army of sentinels and Master Mold in this sort of gigantic new body
It's called the Grant Morrison run, this event occurs, but it's a little bit different. It's Cassandra Nova, who's, I won't go into that, but she's the twin sister of Xavier and has similar powers, and she gets at one of the Trasks to activate these sentinels, and they're kind of like, they're called wild sentinels, but they're kind of almost like like wild animals almost, like they're living in scavenging and for parts and things, and they don't look like your typical sentinel, and that's why it has this kind of desiccated, destroyed, damaged look. So it's not technically Master Mold, but it has that image. It's almost has three heads, like the Tri-Sentinel, which Loki created in the comics. That's exactly what happens, is Genosha gets kind of absolutely obliterated, and thousands, millions die in the mutant nation. And they're all trying to, and again, we talked about this early on. I had a feeling that something bad would happen to Genosha, but I'm sure many people had that. had that inkling. And again, I knew that Leech would be in there as well, and that promise to Leech would come into that effect, which it does a little bit towards the end. But yeah, I think you're right, Max. It's absolutely like, I couldn't tear my eyes away. Like I couldn't, you know something's good when, you know, your phone is down, you're not opening your phone or looking at your phone, you're just absolutely glued to the screen in every moment, every character, every interaction, every line, every look is just, yeah, superb. Just absolutely, I couldn't be more happy with this episode. And again, devastated with what happens. But yeah, we just it's this kind of horrific terrorist attack. I read an interview today with Beau DeMayo. And again, he's not talked about his firing or why he was fired or any of the fallout from that. But he has.
I don't think he's going to, is he?
I think it's just like
no one's talking.
Again, they talked about it as a parting of ways, and we've talked about that in earlier podcasts. But he was talking about this episode being very important to him and how it represented like post 9/11 world that we live in. And he talked about all these other terrorist attacks like Tulsa and other things. But he talked about this one call in a club that he used to frequent called The Pulse, which is in Florida. And I'd never heard about this, but there was a shooting by a Muslim extremist. He went into a gay bar, took people hostage.
I remember this, yeah.
Yeah, I must have missed, I don't know, maybe it's the media doesn't really want us to remember, or I'm not sure, maybe I don't know where I was at the time, what I was doing, but I either forgot about this or, you know, and that might be on me. I'm not saying that the media's, you know, has something against this group of people or anything, but, you know, could be as well, I'm not sure, but... but yeah, it was a Latin night. There was a star of RuPaul's Drag Race was there at this gay bar. And the Muslim extremist, I don't think he necessarily had anything potentially against gay people. I think that was proved in court. But again, he chose that target apparently because the security was very lax. Mm. And I think it was over 49 people were killed that night. And it was the second biggest terrorist attack since 9/11. That was in 2015. And the fact that I'm like, again, kind of discovering this is shocking, really. Why aren't we talking about it? Why aren't we still talking about it? Like, if it was that eventful, you know, it's crazy to me. It's not been particularly busy at work today, so I've been reading up on it, and it's absolutely devastating to read. There's a whole Wikipedia article on it. I would recommend reading it because that just brings home, you know, as much as we like the fun of the X-Men and the energy and the adventure and the powers and everything, ultimately it's about that. It's about hatred and, you know, unwanted acts of aggression against groups of people like that the X-Men represents. And it's horrifying for everybody involved. But yeah, it was really tragic. And again, I knew about the other events that DeMayo has talked about. There's a whole article that he's written, well, not him written, but where his feelings are on it. But I think that's why it hits so hard, the episode. I think because, you know, he lived that, he experienced it, and the community that came together and, you know, got past that, moved past that horrible, tragic event. It's channeled through this episode, and this is him saying that. You know, again, I don't know about the firing, but I think the writing is absolutely superb, and what he's doing, what he's saying, is incredibly important in this very divisive and conflicted world that we live in. I think what he's saying is truly, truly important. And again, I think that's just, that comes through in the episode, his feelings entirely, and his feelings towards these characters especially.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with what you've just so eloquently and brilliantly said. I mean, specifically to this episode as well, they really don't shy away from showing you as well. It's not like you see characters running off screen and being followed by like a hail of bullets or an explosion going off and you go, oh shit, well, everyone in that building's blown up. You're literally seeing innocent characters, innocent mutant characters being killed in front of your eyes.
Yeah, favorite ones. Yeah, yeah,
but yeah. I mean, we were talking before. You see people laid out dead. I mean, it looks like Sebastian Shaw's dead. It looks like Kalisto's dead.
Yeah.
I think Madeline Pryor got killed, but I couldn't swear to it because it's so chaotic.
Yeah, I'm the same. Like, I think some of them I'm not entirely sure, but I've got some of them here. I've got Kalisto's definitely dead. I'm pretty sure Banshee, Moira McTaggart, and Marrow are dead. Because Banshee was carrying Moira.
Shot down, doesn't he?
Yeah, he got shot. He's like, Rogue, do this. And he gets shot and downed. Yeah. Dazzler, I think, might be dead because she was the only one with short hair and a headband. And I think in the lineup of the bodies, she's in there because we see her earlier in the episode. Squid Boy, who's a very kind of obscure character who had a wonderful little relationship with the Juggernaut when he was part of the X-Men. It was in one of probably the worst runs of X-Men, you know, creative runs, but it was one of the highlights for me within that. Madeline Pryor, Kalisto, I think we mentioned everybody apart from the main players, which I'm sure we'll get onto. But yeah, we talked about with our kind of speculation that something bad was going to happen to Genosha. I wasn't sure if they would do, because again, I was like, well, the Morlocks have moved to Genosha. They've been massacred before, and Genosha has been attacked in the comics. So I was like, these two worlds are going to collide in an awful way. But then we said, maybe they won't go that far. Maybe they will just have a mass depowering, maybe, which is ultimately, arguably, just as tragic. Because again, I was like, are they going to push it? Is it still going to be the kids show? But then also, I'm like, it's not. Like, after this episode, it's not a kids show anymore for me. This is not for kids, even though I'm sure, you know, parents will play it. And again, most kids probably won't understand or get the kind of the real world implications that we've talked about.
No, and but maybe they shouldn't have to, you know.
Exactly. If you
don't need to be definitely exposed to the horrors of this world, there's time for that, you know?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm not a parent, and I won't make any judgments when and where or how you do that. That's up to you. I think you'll need to eventually, you need to confront that, but you know, that's your decision when to do that. I was like, some of these, I was like, oh my God, like, because, you know, in the show, nobody even died. Like, we talked about it, like, Xavier's not really dead. Jean didn't really die. You know, all the characters that kind of come close to death or maybe kind of off screen to death a little bit, you know, there's some implications that some characters may or may not have died off screen. But yeah, like, for this, they were like, no, we've got to show this. This has got to be like ground zero, full on, you know, experiencing this. I love that line from Magneto. He goes, you know, we will try and save everybody, and we will know that we never, you know, we did not fail to save anyone this day. Like, we're going all out. And you know, he goes straight for that sentinel. He throws that like cargo container that, you know, like straight at him.
Yeah, he like picks up the monorail and starts like whipping him with it. But just before he does that, he's sort of, the anger's welling up in him, and you can see his thoughts. And there's a very, very quick shot of it's kind of inferred that it's Auschwitz.
Yeah, yeah.
This is like the barbed wire fence and what have you. And he's sort of,
and they've got reliving. Striped uniforms. They've got a star on the chest. Yeah. And right,
it's very
again,
quick, but it's definitely that.
Oh, yeah. I definitely saw it. There's no doubt in my mind that I saw that. But also, what's interesting as well is when he's protecting Leech, he says in German, "Have no fear," which kind of calls back to when his first daughter died, when his powers emerged from the first time. His daughter Anya was trapped in a fire, and he couldn't get through all the people. He couldn't get through to save her. And he had, in the comics, he had, what did he have? He had a medical condition. So his powers didn't come out until he was much older as an adult. He had some sort of medical condition. I can't remember off the top of my head, but it affected him, and his latent mutant powers then came out in that moment, and he killed the crowd in front of him to get to his daughter, but she was already dead. And this is the same mother of Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, who was pregnant at the time, and she runs away because she's afraid of Magneto. There was a lot of kind of real kind of heavy elements with him. And again, that promise he made again to Leech and what he promised to the UN, he's like, don't make me fail, you know, don't let me let you down, is really, really powerful stuff as well. Just all of it.
It is. I mean, his sort of, and I'm saying in inverted commas, his death scene, because there's a level of ambiguity there.
Sure.
I mean, wow, what they layer on here. There's the, obviously he's protecting Leech. Leech is clinging on to him for dear life, and he's sort of generating this sort of magnetic shield around them to sort of stave off the literal death ray of the Sentinels. So while he's got this poor kid who's, you know, clinging onto him for dear life to try and save him, at the same time he physically restrains Rogue and Gambit from joining in. He sort of traps them with a piece of metal around a post that ties them up, obviously, but he, Gambit, even recognizes, saying, no, he's saving us. And just before his shield gives way, there's a wonderful intense close-up of his eyes staring at Rogue, and there's a close-up of her eyes staring back at him, and like time seems to almost slow down. While, and you see it a lot in films and shows, when someone's about to die, they have like an intense stare with someone, don't they, who's like across the other side of the action, like a loved one or something. Like sometimes in like battle scenes or something, when someone's literally about to buy it, they'll look at someone and there'll be that moment where they meet eyes and you're like, this is it, basically. Before, like you said, he says, have no fear, and the shield gives way and they're seemingly obliterated.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know,
you never know.
This is comic books and no one stays dead in comics. It's the well-worn phrase, isn't it?
Yeah.
And with nobody means, you know, hope, you know, no proof of death, so to speak.
True. Even we've seen bodies and we've seen deaths and we've seen, you know, we talked about Jean Grey the other week and her being dead and coming back and Chris Claremont and everything. So yeah, it could still happen. I've got some theories for maybe season two, especially two characters in particular I think we might see again. But yeah, like that's, you know, and I love that he protects Rogue, like he ties her to the post with Gambit, so they're out of the way. Like I love that both Gambit and Magneto are spending this entire, you know, what I love is Rogue is nigh invulnerable as a character with Ms. Marvel's abilities, you know, minus kind of the energy blasting stuff. She is super strong and can fly, but these two men who love her so dearly are constantly trying to protect her, not in like a chauvinistic way or you know, like they're like, oh, you know, because she can handle herself clearly, like she can, you know, knock down a Sentinel. We saw her like RKO a Sentinel or Diamond Cutter a Sentinel in like the first episode, using some wrestling lingo there.
But
they genuinely want her to be safe and to be protected because they love her. And that's what's so kind of heartbreaking about the episode is that, you know, she's trying to protect them and they're trying to protect her. And you know, there's that conflict there. And like, if you only just let me, I'll be honest. Why has Gambit never had a motorbike? I have no idea. Cause it's the coolest thing I've ever seen him do.
He's brilliant. I mean, this battle is a chance for really showcase Gambit and what he can do. Cause it's easy to dismiss him. He's a guy who throws energy charge playing cards at people. But here you really see what he can do. I mean, there's a wonderful scene where he decapitates that Sentinel that's just about to kill everyone, and the full-on X-Men theme plays at the same time while he's doing it. It's phenomenal. And then the head's just on the floor and he just tosses a card into it and to finish it off. And
that monorail you mentioned, like, it comes flying back towards them and he manages to destroy it with his scarf. Scarf is so cool, and I love the outfit he's in as well. It's very like kind of, you know, James Bond or something, or like
well, he's wearing this has literally happened mid gala, hasn't it? So he's in like a white tuxedo, very flashed, got the hair tied back. He looks a million, well they all do look $1 million. But yeah, I think Gambit is like the MVP of this ending, because you really get to see what he can do and what he's all about. I mean, obviously we've got what has happened to Magneto. He seems to be dead. That'll play out however it plays out. But what isn't ambiguous is what happens to Gambit. That's, you know, again, it's hard not to spoil it, isn't it, without talking about it. But I mean, he essentially gives up his life to take down the wild Sentinel, the Master Mold Sentinel. When he stops Rogue from doing, you know, something.
He drives the bike, isn't he? Yeah, and throws it into her, and she's knocked back. I will say, like, his distance from that wild Sentinel, where he's like, oh, I'm going to play my last card.
Ridiculous.
Or
yeah.
I was like, there is no way you could, like, there's no way, one, the Sentinel would notice you just running towards it, and two, like, that you can get that close in just a few leaps is mad to me. But that was my one niggle in the entire episode, my one niggle.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. Yeah, you'd have to be Quicksilver to cover that kind of ground
distance,
that quick.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
It was a bit silly, but the way in which, you know, he goes to obviously jump on it, but he gets physically impaled by one of his tentacles in the side, mortally wounded, but then uses that physical connection to spread his charge throughout the entire machine to basically incinerate it and blow it up. But obviously, seemingly again at the cost of his own life. It's powerful stuff, and he goes out like a proper warrior as well, doesn't he? He says to the Sentinel, my name's Gambit, remember
it.
Badass. What, yeah. As deaths go, it's as great as they come. As on-screen deaths go, it's right up there for me.
Oh god, like I've said before, I'm not a massive fan of Gambit. I don't know how I know. For a lot of people, he's one of their favorite characters. And, you know, I'm a Scott Summers man. I'm not a Gambit man, but that's me.
Mm. Yeah, me too, I think, yeah.
But what a way to go out. If you've got to go, and I feel like if you're going to kill one of the original lineup, I don't think you can kill Jubilee because she's a child. And I don't know if anybody else, maybe Beast. I mean, in the first series, he was kind of, you know, locked away in prison, so you could maybe do that. But even then, I think he's too much of a fan favorite. But then Gambit's a fan favorite in his own right. But I feel like there was only really one way it was going to end, I think, for him. And again, not a Gambit fan, but like, what a showcase of his powers, his ability, who he is, his wit, his charm, you know, his dress sense, you know, who he is. And again, his interactions with Nightcrawler, who again, like, Nightcrawler is one of my favorite characters to interact with others with, because he brings out usually something very different, like he's drinking buddies with Wolverine, you know, which again, two characters you would think would be not friends at all. Like, one's like this God-fearing, you know, fuzzy elf, and the other one's like a murdering, you know, weapon. You know, it's such a, and they were, I'm so glad that he went, oh, he's still alive. I was like, thank fuck. Don't kill him off. Don't kill Nightcrawler off as well. Please. He's my favorite. But yeah, what an incredible way to go. And I it was just so worth it. And then that devastating last moment in the episode where Rogue, you know, says, I can't feel you.
Yeah. And it's the moment that she's finally able to touch him as well.
Yeah, because he's dead. Because he's dead.
She, and there's no life in there. There's no life force to take. He's gone. He's literally gone. And they see the tears running down his skin.
And I like that.
Powerful, powerful stuff.
I like that moment as well where she's been touching Magneto and dancing with Magneto and all this happens. And again, she has a lot of exposed skin, and then Nightcrawler saves them and he collapses, and then she goes to help him. And Gambit's like, what are you doing? Like, she forgot herself for a moment. Yeah. She thought she could be, you know, normal, for lack of a better word. She could just touch somebody because she's been touching Magneto with no problem. She forgot like who everybody else is and how they would react to the powers. And Gambit has to remind her. Mwah, chef's kiss, just the whole thing. Just, yeah, wonderful, wonderful, you know. And again, the team are sat there watching it, and they're like,
yeah, on TV, yeah.
Yeah, and we've had all this kind of like, you know, interpersonal relationship, you know, awkward. I really want to see the cut of that TV show. I want to see that, like, that rapport in its, how they cut it together. I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
But yeah, they go and they say how many, and they're all absolutely devastated. Beast is devastated. And they're just like, and again, it's just because it kind of happens. They kind of make it out to seem that it happens at the exact same time. So I think what they're trying to do, what they're trying to say is that they couldn't have been there because the second Jeans has her like little blip and kind of at the mansion. And then Madeline is having that at the exact same time, almost like,
yeah.
Precognitive, like, shit is happening. I think that's to implicate that they couldn't have got there in the Blackbird and stopped it. I think it's it's supposed to say that it's a million miles away. They wouldn't have made it. They wouldn't be able to help or stop or alter whatever happened because Jean is Jean. Madeline Pryor is Jean. They have that psychic connection. And again, it was almost the effect of it is like, it's almost like a bullet going through their brain the way it was, you know, represented on screen. It was like,
yeah, right in the middle of the forehead, wasn't it?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Then some blood dripping out of the mouth or the nose or whatever. Yeah.
But you are right. We didn't see Madeline Pryor's body. We don't see Magneto's body. There's a few other ones that are a bit vague. Again, we're not sure. This is my feeling on it. I know Cable was there. I know we've been doing time to travel shenanigans, which you and me quite love. You know, we like a good X-Men.
Do.
And there's a lot of, you know, time traveling X-Men characters. And I think it works with the narrative because they're always working towards the future. Their idea is to have a utopian world where the Xavier dream, you know, and I think that's important to have those characters to come from something they're trying to avoid, and they come back and try and stop it, like Rachel Summers or whoever. But yeah, I think those characters are very important. But I think with this, I feel like it has been too impactful for them to time travel out of it. I know there might be some characters might return. I personally don't think Magneto is dead, or in this version, I think he's too important a character to kill off entirely. You know, for what he represents, what he's about. You know, we talked about maybe, you know, in the finale, because we kind of thought maybe this Genosian stuff might happen in the finale, maybe in the three-parter, but clearly not. It's happened now. So I don't know if maybe that, you know, but I think if they do time travel it, I don't want it to see it all fixed. You know what I mean? Like, oh, we wiped it all away. It never happened. I think that would be, for me, a cop-out, just a creative cop-out for me. I don't know about you.
No, I wouldn't like to see it, purely because all the weight's gone then, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Everything that's happened, we've just spent ages talking about how shocking it is and, you know, what it represents and, you know, the devastation, the after effects, the big characters taken off the board. Mm. If they go, right, well, we're just going to knit back and undo what it was that led to it and, you know, stitch in time and all this, I don't really want to see it. I want the after effects and what it means for the characters moving forward to stay in play. I mean, you can, like you said, you can have certain characters who've maybe cheated death or find a way to resurrect certain characters. There's a million ways to do it. Yeah. But I don't want to see these events undone in any way. You know,
yeah,
I want that to be a shadow over the rest of the season and the next season, however many seasons it runs for, as something that's constantly referred to and used as motivation for certain characters' dark turns, used as something that gets referred to that sort of swells that anti-mutant feeling and anti-human feeling from some of the darker side of mutant kind as well, you know. If you take that all the way, take it off the table and retcon it and be like, no, we've gone back and it never happened, we've erased it from the timeline, I just think it would sort of really make what we've just been speaking about a waste of time. So no, I don't want to see it. No.
Yeah, I'm with you. I do have a theory with two of the deaths as well. So we've not seen, like, there's a very big character who is alive somewhere in the universe. The last episode, a character was brought back to life, and it was En-Sabanur, Apocalypse. And we've heard no hide nor hair of him. And the main villains of the show, which, you know, are Sinister's been there, Magneto's been there, but there's been no sign of him. So I think they might be saving him for a second season. Mm. And in the kind of recent kind of X-Force or Uncanny X-Force stories, they had these kind of celestial death seeds, which they would use to create kind of horsemen of apocalypse. I think Dark Angel or Archangel, whatever he was called at the time, was using these death seeds. And I think you have to die for them to be activated and resurrect you in an apocalypse theme, let's say. Gambit was once a horseman of apocalypse. Banshee was once a horseman of apocalypse. So my feeling is we might see them come back. as maybe in the second season they might return, because I think that would bring, especially Gambit coming back in that form, in a dark, like, you know, twisted version, would be quite entertaining. Again, I can understand why people wouldn't want that, or don't want to see that, or feel that that might be a cop-out in itself. But I think this event has to happen. This has to stay, you know, a canon event, for lack of a better word, in this show, because I think it's too important. We become too invested in these characters in these last five episodes. And I said this, I think I said this, I don't know if I said it on the show or outside of it, but I knew that they would bring Cable in at some point, which I thought it was going to be this episode anyway, which they did, to confirm that baby's okay. Because I think a general audience don't know that the baby...
Who he grows up to be, yeah.
Exactly. So they needed to show that, because, you know, your average fan is, or, you know, your average family, your mom, your dad, you know, are watching this like, what happened to the baby? I need to know what happens to the baby. And again, I'm glad, you know, as much as we didn't like the Mojo episode or the Life Death Part 1 episode, I think you needed that there, because otherwise it was just, you needed a little bit of time to breathe for Nathan going and the end of the relationship with Madeline Pryor, and her to get to Genosha and to again get Cable back. Because if you got Cable coming back in the following episode, that would have been too soon for me to have the baby go and be this big sacrifice, and then him come back and be okay, and they realize it too soon. So I'm glad we had that palette change, because that made this episode all the more devastating, because we had the light and fluffy episode, I think, personally. Yeah. But yeah, yeah. Powerful stuff.
Yeah, it is. And they even did it with the theme song at the end. Did you notice?
Oh, yeah. It was a sad version.
It was a theme, the regular theme, but like a slowed down, like, piano version, not the, you know, the kick-ass theme. Yeah. Reminded me of the old show 24, when they used to end it with the ticking clock, but when, like, a certain massive character used to get killed, the clock was silent when it ticked at the end. Yeah. Just reminded me of that little touch.
That's cool. I love that.
But again, it's like adding a bit more weight to the situation, a bit more gravitas. I think it would have been very bizarre if they'd have ended with the regular theme. You've just ended on this ultimate down note. Yeah, exactly. And then the killer thing kicks in. That would have been like, Jesus Christ, really, like, tonally all over the place.
Bad taste.
Yeah, really. Yeah, it would have been bad taste, actually, and quite weird as well. Weird creative choice. I'm glad they did that. So, I mean... Yeah. My God, it really does. Where do you go from here? You know, what?
Well, we know where we're going. I'm not going to be here for it. So next week's episode is a Life Death Part 2. So I imagine we're going to see what the continuing story is with Storm and Forge. Hopefully I can say, I'm not going to be live or stream with you, because frankly, as much as I love you and doing this podcast, Max, I need a little bit of a rest from podcasting, because I've done quite a lot recently. So I'm like, I just need a little breather. But I will send some feelings over. If I don't record it, I'll write it. I'll send something. But yeah, I'm sure it'll be you and Dave Horrocks with an X are going to absolutely smash the next couple of episodes, and I can come back and do stuff. But yeah, we know it's that. It's going to conclude that. I don't know if it'll maybe say a bit more. Maybe there'll be, again, a split plot where maybe they're dealing with something else, or maybe it will just entirely focus on Storm and Forge. That'd be interesting. But again, can't wait to see where it goes. And I'm glad, even though I know, again, we weren't so happy with the previous episode, I'm glad it was there, and I'm glad the order they're doing it, because again, I think after this episode, again, we're going to need some breathing room before we get to that finale. I think it's Life Death Part 2 and Bright Eyes I won't be here for. So, and then by the time I come back, we can do the final three episodes, which, yeah, I'm on tenterhooks. But Max, we're not the only ones who have opinions on this episode. I reached out to social media and asked anybody else who has any interesting comments. So Sarah Coyne, who's been listening to us, and she's going to join us from one of our episodes when I come back. She says, look how they massacred my boys. She says, what a roller coaster. The depiction of Nightcrawler Kurt was brilliant, excellent, and much needed relief from a very dark episode. They really captured his playful, cheeky spirit. I knew the episode was gearing up for something bad to happen, but they still managed to expertly deliver one emotional gut punch after another. first with the relationship drama going on, and then, of course, the devastating ending. Genuinely terrifying and affecting storytelling, although not quite as upsetting as Moira's accent.
Oh, I'm glad someone else picked up on it. It wasn't just us two.
Yeah. Sarah's Scottish, and she sent me messages about, you know, Moira's accent in the original show. I think she was watching the Proteus saga, and she was like, fuck me, this is painful. I think were her words, I believe.
I don't blame her. I think if I was Scottish, I would be sort of beyond offended by that accent.
In June you're going to get to hear me, Mike and Megan do a lot of vaguely offensive South African accents, because we just recorded our District 9 podcast, so you'll be hearing a lot of that.
I don't miss with a fucking prawn, or what, mate?
I would never be pornographic with a prawn. So yes, you're going to hear a lot of that from us, but it's a very good podcast. But I'm recording ahead of time because I want to have again a little bit of breathing room. But Brett Scott, and he does Marvel Plus, I believe the podcast he does all about the Disney Plus, and he's saying storytelling, dialogue, drama, action. Wow, this is X-Men, and I couldn't agree with you more, Brett.
We could have just said that and say that the last hour and a half of talking. So I think he summed it up so succinctly and perfectly there. This is it.
With all these comments, I'm always like, oh, man, if only I just said that and left it all the silence for the next hour and a half or however long it's been.
Yeah.
But yeah, just wonderful. Again, people are loving it. I'm so glad it's reaching people and it's affecting people and people are enjoying it and they're embracing something that I loved as a child, and it's back in the best possible way and being done in the best possible way. Absolutely phenomenal. Where do we go from here? Where do we go from here indeed, Max?
Well, we'll see. Like we were saying before, that's half the fun of it, isn't it? You know, back to episodic weekly TV and not having it all to binge in one fell swoop. It's great. That anticipation is... It's great because you've got a whole week then to let it percolate in your mind and start to think about it. So
yeah.
And I'm excited. I'm really excited.
I sent Max a trailer today. I won't spoil what was in the trailer. It's a very clippy kind of trailer, but there was a little thing in there which I'm excited to see where that comes. Maybe expanding farther outside of the X-Men universe potentially, but again, I won't say what I saw. And again, there was another cameo I don't want to mention because I feel like we're treading on some of the stuff we said last week a little bit, and again I feel like we're heading in that direction, you know, finding out maybe who he is. I can't wait to see where it goes. And again I didn't predict any of these deaths or these characters going, but what a ride.
Absolutely, yeah. And long may it continue.
Absolutely. Right. Well, again, it's not going to be me here with you next week. So it is going to be Dave Horrocks, but he is just as passionate and excited about this show as I've been. And he's let us, talk wild and crazy stuff. Lots of musical references as well. He's allowed us to make this episode. I know I'll be sorely missed. Probably not.
You will.
Oh, okay. Okay. But you guys are going to absolutely smash it. I'm going to be listening as well. Don't you worry. I will be paying attention. And again, I'll try and send my feelings across as well. But yeah, you guys are absolutely going to have an absolute blast with these next couple of episodes. And again, Sarah, join us. And I'm hoping to get Ben Crampton, the attention-seeking geek, on as well, because he did a few X-Men podcasts we did together. So I think he's the perfect person to bring on and talk about this show as well. So yeah, I've got some guests coming on, and yeah, you know, and hopefully we'll be doing it again next year, Max. I can't wait if it comes out that soon.
Well, it's coming, isn't it? We know they're doing a second and the third, supposedly, in development as well. So when it's been as roaring a success as it has, it's inevitable, isn't it? So I hope it's not like real lengthy gaps between each season. I'm sure production started now. It must have on the second series.
I know the writing must be done, because I know they're recording the dialogue. Even before this came out, they were recording dialogue for the new series. So it must, you know, it's just a case of animating it, really, I think, now. And that's it. And, you know, starting the PR machine again. But yeah. and whenever it takes place, I'm going to be there. I'm you know, hopefully I won't be on bloody holiday again. Fucking typical. I'm going on holiday. Typical. Fuck's sake.
Well, yeah. Well, you'll be missed. And like we said, Dave, our wonderful friend and co-founder of this network that this show's going out on, is going to step in for the next couple of episodes. I couldn't think of a better person to take your place, albeit absolutely. Temporarily.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Back with a vengeance. So, yeah, look forward to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Well, guess that's it for this week. You can catch, well, you won't catch me, but you can catch Dave and Max next time on Examining X-Men 97. See you in the future issues. Bye. Do 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 do